sabbatical year for the land. And the Sabbath of the land will be for you to eat, for you, your female servant, your hired hand, your settler who lives with you, and for your animal and for the beast in your land shall be all of the produce to eat. So, what we're told here is, in the sabbatical year, don't work, don't plant the land. Produce has to be left open for everybody. You're not allowed to destroy it. It's for eating. You're not allowed to market it normally. And at the end of the year, you're supposed to get rid of it. So don't hoard it. These are the mitzvot of Shemitah, of the sabbatical year. The word Shemitah itself means to release. You are releasing your ownership effectively. And here's the thing. Among all the mitzvot of the Torah, the many mitzvot with their various punishments, there are very few that carry the kind of penalty that the sabbatical year does. A penalty on a national scale and a penalty on a personal scale if we don't stick to the sabbatical year. If you look at source number 2, look at this. And God describes what he's going to do if we don't fulfill this mitzvah. You I shall scatter among the nations. I will unsheath the sword after you. Your land shall be in ruins. Your cities shall be destroyed. Then the land shall enjoy her Sabbaths, all the days of ruin. And you shall be in the land of your enemies. Then the land will be destroyed. She will enjoy her Sabbaths. And all the days of ruin she shall halt, as she did not halt on your Sabbaths when you dwelled upon her. Land in ruins. And not just that, but the Talmud sees in a sequence in the Torah reading, I brought it for you in source number 3, but I'm not going to read it inside, terrible personal punishments if a person violates this law of the sabbatical year. And so I'm going to ask you a question. Why is the sabbatical year such a big deal? Why is it that this carries such terrible national consequences and personal consequences? What is this about? My question for you. They only gave me half an hour, and my time's ticking, so don't make me wait too long here.
Okay, so just to be clear, I think Rabbi Tortino wants people to offer actual answers.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry. That wasn't rhetorical.
I'm just encouraging.
Yeah, no, it's your turn. Don't be shy.
Well, sabbatical goes right back to the cycles of seven that reflect back on Shabbat, which symbolizes the God's creation of the world and putting us in it and giving us something that we do repetitively in various ways, but especially Shabbat, but then also the sabbatical year, and then, as a base. So I'd say that's one answer.
Right. So one of the benefits of Zoom is that people have names on here, so I can say Ron and, have some confidence that I'm right. Ron suggests, I think very aptly, that it embodies some key ideals for us this sabbatical year. Creation, God empowering us to act within the world, very much so. What else? Additional ideas? Yes, Ralph.
One of the issues is it's acknowledging that the land is not ours. As the Torah says, we're strangers with God in the land. We're tenants. We're not owners. And this understanding of God is essential.
We learn humility. We learn the land is, as you just said, God's creation given to us. If you take a look on the sheet at source number 4, I brought this for you from Rabbi Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. Jumping off from what you just said, Ralph, he talks about the role of the Jews and the mitzvah of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. This is from Rabbi Hirsch's work, Chorev, which is a fantastic work, very worth reading. He goes through the various mitzvot of the Torah and gives brilliant explanations for them. He says, Israel was supposed to be a people among peoples. For this purpose, God gave Israel its own place on the earth for its own special tasks. In order, however, that Israel's land intended for the realization of Israel's task should not, through the sin of pride of possession, become the cause of Israel's downfall, God ordained Shemitah, Yovel, the Jubilee year, Bikurim, bringing the first fruits to God, Truma, Maaser, tithes, Challah, the tithe from dough, in conjunction with Israel's own soil. God says, I don't want you to become arrogant. I'm giving you land because you need it in order to function properly as a people, but don't become arrogant. And so the text continues, Shemitah, as well as the Jubilee year, the every 50th, affirm God as owner by right of all property. They also, through the prohibition of work on the land, express for the Holy Land the lesson which Shabbat conveys in connection with lordship of the earth, which goes back towards what Ron was saying as well. So it prevents arrogance. That's one major piece of it. It improves our character by preventing arrogance, and it also makes us generous people under the same heading of improving our character. If you look at source number 5, the remarkable book Sefer HaChinuch, which also goes through the 613 mitzvot and tries to provide explanations for each. It was written by somebody in 13th century Spain, chose to be anonymous. Always when you write something and you claim to be anonymous, that it leads to like, you know, a dozen theories as to who it is. If he had just given us his name, he would have saved us a lot of time. Nonetheless, he says, another benefit of the mitzvah is to acquire the trait of generosity. There is no one as generous as a person who gives without hope for reciprocation. Meaning, you open up your field, you say everybody gets to take. They're not giving you, they're just taking. This teaches you generosity. And it makes us spiritual people. I brought you in source number 6, Rabbi Isaac Arama in his Akedat Yitzchak, who talks about becoming spiritual people. We're not working the land. That gives us a chance to grow spiritually, right? Sometimes we don't appreciate that, right? I mean, spend enough time in quarantine and you find yourself complaining about missing your office and missing all the places that you go and the things that, you know, that you could be doing instead of taking advantage of spiritual opportunities, and you realize sabbatical year is not so easy. But the idea here is, and what I'm trying to suggest is, one set of benefits of the sabbatical year is that it improves our character, prevents arrogance, makes us generous people, makes us spiritual people. More than that, second approach, wildly different. The sabbatical year benefits the planet. Not just benefits us as people by improving our character, but it benefits the planet. The Rambam, Maimonides, wrote this in his Guide to the Perplexed. He says, you know, your fields are going to do better. I brought it for you in source number 8, from the Moreh Nebuchim, from the Guide to the Perplexed. He says, it's going to improve the land, right? He's familiar, the ideas of leaving land fallow are ancient, thousands of years old. Even crop rotation, which is a more sophisticated version, is also an ancient idea. He says, your fields will do better. We want the land of Israel to do better in terms of agricultural output. That's one way to look at it as benefiting the planet. On the other extreme of benefiting the planet is the idea found in a book called Shem Mishmuel. Shem Mishmuel was written by the second Sachachava Rebbe. I brought it here in source number 9. And he actually argues that the world was created on a timer. Okay, when Jews started using Shabbos clocks, we were imitating God with creation. What God did when God created the world was to say, I'm putting the world on a timer. Every 6 days, you need a Shabbat. And that renews the license of the world to continue for another week. And every 6 years after that, you need to set the timer again with a sabbatical year. And that gives you another 6 years. The world needs to be renewed. I'm going through this idea quickly because it's not my main focus. I just want to show you different aspects of this upcoming sabbatical year, which starts this Rosh Hashanah. So the first idea is it improves our character. Second idea, it benefits the planet, whether very practically in terms of agricultural output or mystically as resetting the timer on the universe. And then a third approach. But the third approach also is not where I'm going to end up. I know a good speech should have 3, but we got 4 in this case. The third approach is it improves our trust relationship with God. Yes, it reminds us that God created the world. We already talked about that. But it also compels us to rely on God for support. I'm not going to plant. What's going to be? How am I getting food then? Trust me, God says. Don't worry about it. I got it covered. This is meant to increase our sense of trust in God. And that's our third approach. But now, I want to leave that behind. There's more to be said about it. I brought you sources on the sheet about it, but I want to really focus on number 4. And that is Shemitah as the ultimate social mitzvah. Because in order to build a Jewish nation in the land of Israel, we need a sense of responsibility for each other. We've already talked about being good to each other personally. We've talked about giving to others without expecting something in return. And that's true, but I'm talking about something bigger. There are two different levels to acts of chesed, acts of kindness. There's kindness that I can do personally for somebody else, and then there is kindness that a community can perform. What we want is more than just to be individuals who give. We want to create a society which bands together to help others in need. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, 100 years ago, a little more than 100 years ago, suggested this. He said the Torah presents the mitzvah of tzedakah twice. Once, the Torah portion we read this past Shabbat, Bahar, and the other time in the portion called Re'eh. But in one case, it speaks to the individual. In the other case, it speaks to the community. You can only act as an individual realistically. But having a communal mitzvah of helping others means we act with an eye towards creating a coordinated cooperative community, which I really like saying, creating a coordinated cooperative community. That works well. You want to create a community that's going to work together with a mentality of looking out for each other. This is a necessity. The Jews received the mitzvah of Shemitah on the cusp of leaving Mount Sinai and going off into the land they expect to take, although it ends up taking them 40 years to get there. But they're supposed to be entering the land and creating a community of kindness, and that's what Shemitah is all about. All the other things we said are nice and true and valid and important lessons, and they're in Shemitah, they emerge from Shemitah. But to me, the main lesson is this lesson of creating a community of kindness. And the best way I can present this is with a story. Take a look, please, on the sheet, those who have who have downloaded the sheet. If you haven't, that's okay. I'm going to read out my translation of the following great story. Source number 13. I found this in a collection called Otzar Chaim. It's a collection of comments on the Parsha. Rabbi Chaim Zuckerman was the one who collected it. I don't know what the original source for it is, but here's the story. It once happened with Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen of Radomsk that the price of wheat rose and rose. And the price was so elevated that a se'ah of wheat cost 10 rubles, 12 rubles, and more. Se'ah, fairly large amount, not huge, of wheat. Costs 10 rubles, 12 rubles, the price is skyrocketing. The great and powerful wheat merchants among Rabbi Shlomo's followers, his chassidim, not only did they invest all of their wealth in purchasing wheat, but they borrowed from their friends all they could grasp in order to invest it in the merchandise, which had become such a hot commodity from one day to the next. The price is going up, and they're all buying. Well, not long passed, and merchant ships brought grain from afar. And the rotating wheel of prices turned, right? Because what happens? Supply and demand. There's suddenly a lot of supply. Outstrips the demand. Prices drop. That's the way it works. So, the price falls to the lowest level. The mighty merchants saw their painful plight. They gathered and approached their Rebbe. Have mercy on us, Rebbe. Pray for us that the price of wheat should recover, so that we will not be cleaned out and debt-ridden from this investment. Well, the Rebbe of Radomsk replied, know, my masters, that we do not daven for Hashem when food becomes cheap. We don't ask Hashem to stop sending us great kindness. He says, I'm sorry, you're out of luck. Grain went down in price? I'm not going to daven to God that grain should become more expensive. To which they said, but our master, if the price of wheat does not return to its heights, we'll be cleaned out of all of our assets and the assets of our friends, everything we borrowed. What's going to happen to us? My children, Rabbi Shlomo responded, don't worry. The one who took care of the poor when grain was expensive will take care of you now when grain is cheap. Sharp response from the Radomsk Rebbe. What's the message here? The message he's trying to give them is that we don't put our gain ahead of the losses of others. Right? We don't say, well, I'm going to gain, I want if that also means that other people lose. That's not cool. That's what he says to them. You can't daven for the price to go up. That is not happening. And that's what Shemitah teaches us as well. Take a look at source number 14, please. When the Torah presents the mitzvah of Shemitah, it does this very interesting thing where it turns to the reader and says, now I know what you're thinking, reader. Look, he says, V'chi samaru, you're going to say, what will we eat in the seventh year? We will not plant, and we will not harvest our produce. What are we going to have to eat? Tell me something. How many questions were there in source number 14? How many questions does the Torah anticipate us asking in sentence in source number 14? What will we eat in the seventh year? We will not plant and we will not harvest our produce. How many questions is that?
Two
questions. What are the two questions? You're right. What are the two questions?
I'm just going back to see what it was. What will we eat and what will we plant?
I would break it down a little differently. I got the same number as you, but I broke it down a little differently. What will we eat? We're not planting. That's your first question. If I'm not planting, then I have nothing to eat, right? But they don't stop there. We're also not going to harvest. What does that question imply when you say, and we're not going to harvest? What does that mean? What are you asking? If I'm not going to harvest, what's going to happen to it?
Not going to make a living, and how am I going to afford to eat?
If I'm not going to harvest, everybody else is going to get it. Right? I am not getting it. Everybody else is getting it. The Torah says you're going to ask two questions. Number one, we can't plant. Therefore, we're not going to have anything grow. And second, whatever does grow, whatever grows wildly, whatever fruit comes out on the trees, because it comes out every year from the trees, that's all going to be given away. The second question is like the question of the wheat investors. We're going to give it away. We're not going to have anything for ourselves. And the answer of Shemitah is, don't put your needs first. Recognize the importance of the needs of others. If you take a look at the last source on the sheet from the Midrash says, when the Torah says on the seventh, you shall release it and abandon it. The Midrash says, why did the Torah say this? If not for paupers to be able to eat, you're going to say, I'm going to bring in the produce and I'll distribute it to the needy myself. And the Torah says, no, break holes in your fences. Make sure that other people can get in. And then it says, but we don't really make you break a hole in your fence because your property will be ruined. We don't want you to have to do that. So we stop short of demanding that you break holes in your fences. But the point is, you don't harvest it. You don't take it in. You make sure to put other people's needs before your own. The class that I taught right before this was about Naomi and Ruth. And the same message was there. Remember how the story goes in the first chapter of the book of Ruth? Do you remember the story? Naomi and her family went and left Beit Lechem at a time of famine, right? We're familiar with the story. Naomi and Elimelech and their sons Mahlon and Kilion, they went off into Moab. And in Moab, Mahlon and Kilion die. And Naomi has her two daughters-in-law with her, and they want to return with her to the land of Israel. And Naomi rejects them and says, I don't want you to come back with me. And three times she pushes them away. She pushes them away, to make a long story short, because I don't want to overshoot my time, but it's too good an association. She turns them away for their own good. She turns them away because she has nothing for them back in the land of Israel. She has no one for them to marry. She has no means of supporting them, right? There's more to be said about this, but fundamentally, she had an opportunity to have two able-bodied helpers come back with her, and she said no for their sake. She puts their needs before her own. That's what Shemitah is about. It's about putting the needs of others before our own. And the Torah emphasizes this theme with Shemitah and provides all of the dire warnings we talked about 20 minutes ago if we violate it, because it's vital for the state that we are meant to create. As citizens in a democracy, we're well aware that with every election we are torn between voting for our own parochial needs and voting for what we believe will serve the good of the municipality, the province, the country as a whole, right? If all of us ask the question of, but I'm not going to be able to harvest, the result will be the tyranny of the majority over the minority, right? All those people who are trying to harvest for themselves will mass together, and those who have more in common will be able to lord it over those who have less in common. That's what's going to happen. Shmita says that's not the way you do it, and it's not just about a democracy. The same thing was true in the time of a monarchy. Social organizations on local levels were always democratic for a very, very long time. And even if it was autocratic, what is the autocrat going to say? Is the outlook what's good for me, or is the outlook what's good for society? The same is true in any organization. It's true in a shul. It's true in a school. It's true in any group. Are we looking out for each other's needs first? That's really what it comes down to. So Shemitah has so much to offer us, this sabbatical year mitzvah. It teaches us to improve our character, to not be arrogant and to be generous and to be spiritual, that whole first level that we gave. It teaches us to benefit the planet, right? By letting the land rest so that it'll produce better, and then mystically offering a reset for the universe. Third, it improves our trust relationship with God. We learn to trust God. We're not going to plant, and yet it'll be okay. But fundamentally, I think the Torah gives us all of these warnings about how this is so important when we're about to enter the land, because it's a vital lesson for having a society. It's a vital lesson for creating a Jewish nation. Shemitah teaches us to look for the needs of others in advance of our own, and that what's in it for me doesn't work. The farmers in Radomsk in Poland had to learn it the hard way. Not the farmers, I should say, the wheat merchants in Radomsk had to learn it the hard way. They had to lose their money in their investment. That's a painful way to learn it. But we can learn it via Shemitah. When we open up the field, when we open up the orchard, and we say to the world, come in and take. When you benefit, I am happy. It's a remarkable lesson that I think can carry us as a nation very far. Thank you so much. And my email address is on the source sheet. If people want to send me comments or questions on the talk, I would be glad to hear it. But I know that you have a next session coming up.